I'm beginning of the passage. If he acted there from Sinai, Yaakov lived in the Shalom 17 years. And Rashi starts off not by explaining the words, but by explaining how the parasha is situated in this type of thing. Well, the parasha is Stuma. Why is this parasha Stuma? Why is this the parasha Stuma? Parasha Stuma normally refers to when there's not so much space between one parasha and the other, there's less space. If you should keep a shenista Yaakov Avinu, nistemu eneihem v'libom shal Yisrael mitzoras hashibush eschivu l'shavah. In other words, the stima of the parasha signifies the stima of the heart of Klal Yisrael from the shibud, the shibud Mitzrayim, from the servitude of Mitzrayim. And it was Rochi, and his peers on Rashi.
Can I interrupt for a second, please?
Sure.
I have to ask a little bit to make sure I can ask questions. Are there any parashios where there's no space whatsoever?
No, this is it. The only one.
Okay.
And this is what the Mizrahi point is. He has a problem with it. He says, he doesn't understand. He says, what's the parasha stuma? There's no parasha stuma. Parasha stuma suggests that there's a space. A smaller space, not a bigger space. There's no space at all.
Right. And the first word I see right next to
right.
The last word of
Rashi. Right. Unlike any other parasha in the Torah, we start a new parasha with no space at all. Right? So he says that the word stuma is not really so meduyik according to the way we usually use these words.
How do they know ever, I mean, where was the first time they were told to do that, though?
In other words, what you're saying is, how do they start a parasha with no space? Is that okay?
Well, where are we told to put no space?
In the Sefer Torah itself,
in parashas you have stumas and sufa.
You have all the parashas. No, that is called a parasha. Where did the stuma or sufa?
Is that no better than Moshe Rabbeinu?
Right. Exactly. Now, what Moshe Rabbeinu is exactly what that sufa is stuma. We're the lame. No, what Moshe Rabbeinu is there, right? So, generally speaking, we'll start a new parasha either with the parasha sufa, meaning once you have nine letters. You skip to the end of the line or the end, or the next line. That's the next one. And Parashat Stuma, you have nine letters and then you can see them on the same line.
Count.
Right? So it's a count. Here is the only place where we start a parashah with no space at all. And that's the question of the aim of Zrochi, where he says, it's not Parashat Stuma, it's no parashah at all. So I don't want to confuse the issue again. What we refer to as a
parashah,
that's what I was just going to say. I don't want to confuse the issue. Parsha, according to its real terminology, refers to a place in the Torah where there's a space in the Torah. That's called Parsha. Right? And that happens multiple times each Sabbath, which is the reading of a week. But here the question is, again, there's no psucha or stuma here. Right? Therefore, Zochtim Zochi, he says as follows. He says, the question is, why is it that there is no space here at all? Right? He says, why is it called a parasha? There's no space there. It's called a parasha, he says, although there's no space, because Ezra HaTofer, he says, was not Mesakim, was Mesakim this parasha, the beginning of this parasha, from Vayechi Yaakov. Why was he Mesakim the beginning of this parasha from Vayechi Yaakov? Because he had a Kabbalah, listen to this, he had a Kabbalah that there should have been a space there. There should have been a space there. It should have been a parasha. Why is there no parasha there? Only because of the reason that it says that. Therefore, he says, Loma parasha zu stuma. This parasha, meaning this theoretical potential. Parasha is stuma, which should have been a space. Therefore, there's a message here. So this is the reading of the Rashi. Rashi says, Loma parasha zu. Why is this parasha? Which is not a parasha. All right. But it is a parasha, potentially. It should have been a parasha, and it says stuma. Why is that so? It's because this stuma in there, believe it or not, it's Torah Hashibud she'eschivu l'shavah, which means there's an emotional stuma here. Oh, there's an emotional stuma here, right? In other words, emotionally, there was a stuma going on here in the hearts and minds of Klal Yisrael who had now fallen into shivud l'shavah. So this is the chapter of this Rashi's first chapter here. Now I want to take another little point over here. In the second passage, it says, as Yaakov is about to die, Yaakov was near the answer, falls on Yosef, and we'll have no more tossy chain by Yemecha, Simna Yotchatach at Yosef, put your hand under my thigh. What's the pshat, put your hand under my thigh? So generally, what you learn in Cheder, is, and this goes back to the first time Simna Yotchatach at Yosef is mentioned, which is in Parshas Tevet, that's the first place. That it's mentioned in the Parshas Tevet, and Rashi there explains, and Rashi there explains that Hanishba, somebody who swears, Torah Lito Biyoda Chepet Zol Mitzvah. You have to have a Chepet Zol Mitzvah. What's a Chepet Zol Mitzvah? Can you say for Torah Lito Tfilah? A Chepet Zol Mitzvah. Right? Something that has Kedusha in it. And that is how you, just like, you know, today's days, you know, have to put their hands on the Bible elsewhere. So this is what you would have to do. And a kitas, that's called the shruv and the kitas chefas, right? Make a shruv about something. But there wasn't any such thing. The only mitzvah that he had was milah. And therefore, he took a milah in his hand. This is interesting. And that's Rashi's pshat. And that's the pshat that most of us are familiar with. However, there's a bunch of other perushim on this. And so we have over here, on one hand, Talmud Takasei like Rashi. However, we have another pshat. And this is a fascinating pshat. Generally, when one person commits to the other, we have something that's called a kiaskaf. Kiaskaf is a handshake. Like the handshake is a sign of commitment. That sign of commitment, when it's done between two equals, that's the way it's done. When it's not done between two equals, it's done in a different way. The Rashbam alludes to it over here when he says, look what I said in Parashat Tevet. What does he say in Parashat Tevet? In Parashat Chayisar, he says, what does he say over here in Parashat Chayisar? So the amazing thing is that there's a difference, he says, between the commitment that's made between two equals and one that's made between somebody who is on top of somebody who's subservient. The two examples he gives is a parent and child and a master and a servant. In those cases, he says, the commitment is made by one, by the son or servant putting his hand under the person's thigh as if they're sitting on him. Right? So it's not, you know, you're sitting on him or this type of thing, right?
Like a sign of avdus, like,
yeah. In other words, it's a sign not only of commitment, but a sign of achnor, a sign of subservience. Right? And therefore, instead of doing this kias kaf, F2 equals do, which is I shake your hand, who's different than anyone else? It's funny, because the president, they studied his body language. I know they do body language studies. You're familiar with this? And they see when he shakes somebody's hand, he's rocking the whole person. And he's making sure his hand is on top. Most people, however, never do anything like that. Right? It's a weirdness. It's something that's a little bit awkward. It's a little bit tactless, right? But especially since it's so obvious. But generally speaking, a handshake is made between two equals, and it's done in a way that's very mutual. When one wants to show commitment in a way that's not mutual, that's the way to do it. He says an Eved or a Ben will put his hand under the thigh of his father slash master, and that's the whole expressive commitment. I don't have the Shvam in front of me right now, but this is his shot that he says. Over here we have the Chizkuni, who just says it very briefly. He says, Zoyt Lofon of Yisrael, Dugnas Tkiyat Kafi. It's like a Tkiyat Kafi. It doesn't explain all the rest, but all the rest is in the Rashbam, who explains that the Pshat is that he puts his hand under his thigh as a sign of subservience.
So what says he never did it? Why didn't he do that?
Why didn't
he do that? He never did it.
Never?
So also, he never did that. So he didn't do it. Music expresses this, but he didn't do it. He wasn't in the past.
According
to the child,
that Yosef actually did it. Yeah,
that's
the unwritten thing. I think he actually did it.
Yeah. I was going to ask the same question. I was going to ask that as well. Yeah, because otherwise, would the terrorist have said it?
I just want to know what he did the same thing. Just a minute. Exodus, interesting. I mean, one of the Yeshayim were actually told about these four times. Now, Rabbeinu Menachem, not a very famous Rishon, but he says, interesting, Yaakov Avinu, when he said, Vayeva Yishov Ali, Yishov Ali, Yaakov Avinu with him was Mavater on it. And he explains why. He says, only Mekima She'en Choreitza Liga B'Milosi, since you don't feel comfortable doing that, Yishov Ali B'Divu or Yishov Ali B'Divu. In other words, he gave up on that. That's interesting. I never paid attention or realized that. I would think the pastor says that he did do it. But this is again, one of the Yishayim was saying, what's your thing?
Did it have possibly anything to do with the fact that Yosef
is a Rishon? Because the Ben Ladin, the Ben Ladin,
he says, "Bris Hashua, Al Ben Ladin, Al Ben Ladin, Al Kein Oizo, the Doim of the Indian Hashibut." Hank says, "Ben Yechabed Av, the Ever Ladin, Al Pkias Kaf, El Kaf, Al Kriis Has Bris Dovo, Al Shnayim, Lava Ben Masor, Mutsuy Bisho Or Ben Ayon." That's all the people. But we all do these type of equal stuff, and somebody, when one really deserves respect and honor from the other. But I'll go back to this chat over here. Okay, something we're saying because he actually never did it. According to the chat, it's a problem like Rashi. The chat is that it had to do with the Melo, so he ended up being Mavater on it. According to the Rashbam, that's just how I would say, he did do it. It's just not specified clearly. But I found another chat, another two chat, which I find fascinating. One is about Ravanel's chat, who says that when he said Simba Yotcha Tachas Yerechi, he explains it differently than it was said in the case of Roman Aliyah's author. He says, this is a different story. He says Simba Yotcha Tachas Yerechi is Akdama. What he's about to say. Simba Yotcha Tachas Yerechi, put your hand under my thigh, I'll see you more the chas of Rehama from Tosalim and Mitzrayim. Carry me out of Mitzrayim. Another way. He's saying, hold me. Not right now. After my passing, you'll have your arms on the knee, carry me out. That's about an old shot. Very interesting. So this is like Dova to the request of it. It's part of the request. You give me a request about an old shot. Another shot is from another Rishon who wrote a statement called Mincha Balula. In Mincha Balula, he says, Tachas Yerechi refers to Yerite Yerechi. Right? Yerite Chalotzov. One of the descendants are called Yerite Yerechi. Right? Simply also Tachas Yerechi means support my family, my children. Take care of them. Supervise them. Keep an eye on them. Simply also Tachas Yerechi. Support them, right? Tmicha, I think. Support my family. Right? What's so gishmak about that shout? Because later at the end of the parasha we find the brother saying to Yosef, Avicha Tzivol Lefnei Moisei Leimer. After I go away, Tono Pesha Khatoson, Kirog Malucha. Rashi says, I'm bewildered, he says. I don't find Yaakov ever saying anything like that. He says they were so afraid that they said something that wasn't true. But the Mincha Balula says, this is what it was based on. Simply also Takaz Rechimin. Yaakov Inu was saying, I am about to pass on, I want to see you taking care of the family. This is what they were referring to when they said, your father said that you should forgive us. In other words, move on and take care of us instead of bearing the grudge again. Now one more stickle I want to go into here before we move, another Rashi, before we move on to depth of the Rashi. Rashi in Pasuk Koftes. Famous Rashi. Pasuk Koftes, the last Rashi in Pasuk Koftes. Almost if Bereini B'Mitzrayim. Last Rashi on the second Pasuk. Mitzrayim, almost if Bereini B'Mitzrayim. Why? He says a bunch of reasons. Thankfully, it's a for of Kinem, and we're asking that as goofy. The land will turn into lice. And they're going to be creeping around onto my body. I don't appreciate that. Number one. Number two, if you ain't Macy Hustalar Tchaim, well, it's not Gilgum Machilin. Those who are buried in Hustalar, when they come to life, they have to have the star of rolling through tunnels on the way to Eretz Yisrael. I don't want to go through that. And number three, Le'asuni Mitzrayim Avayim Tzichon. The Mitzvah should turn me into Avayim Tzichon, will be the star from the end. Now the Rav, same route that we have on the Shnayis, Rabbeinu Avraham about the Muda. Says, why is it that Rashi said, brought all of these three? Why couldn't they be satisfied with any of these reasons on their own? What was the need for all three of them?
Should have called Exigen too, now, I mean, or the Iker. Should be, should make him Tagetchke. That's what we're trying to do, the Erzke.
Why
is it last to?
Let's try to work through other outside, so we can figure out anything based on that. But basically he says like this. He says, if Rashi would have thought only the first reason, and said, it's going to turn into Kina. Turn into Kina? Okay. The Kal Yisrael lived in Gresham. They weren't in a Kina. So why couldn't the solution be to bury him in Gresham? You don't have any issue with the Kina. So that's not enough of a reason. Therefore, he says, A Meisei Chutzal Mitzchayim, which means, it doesn't matter where Mitzrayim or Chutzal to bury me, it's going to be a problem, because the Gilgul Mechila is no matter where Mitzrayim is. Okay. So why don't we take that reason, which would be a broader reason, which would answer everything. Say, A Meisei Chutzal Mitzchayim, and he says, no, that's not either good enough. Why? He says, well, put him into an iron right now, which is what happened with Yerisha Matzah. They put him into an iron and carried him out later. So put him in an iron, when Chai Yisrael leaves, they'll take him, turn him to throw him down. So he throws in the third reason. We are sitting with Shai, Avay Dezorah, I want out. I want to be out of here before they turn me into an Avay Dezorah. Okay, so that's the best reason. So that's the best reason, why can't we just stick to that? So he says, no. He would say, take him out into someplace else in Chofnoyah. And that would actually be great. Because by Moshe Rabbeinu we find that it's a big schos. Moshe Rabbeinu is bearing chutzpah. It's Meisei chutzpah to come along with Moshe Rabbeinu. Why doesn't Yaakov Avinu want to do that? There would be even a good reason to do it. To go after somewhere else for chutzpah. You don't have the problem with the kingdom. You don't have the problem with Avodah Zarah. And you don't have to ask yourself for that. He says, no. Ain't Meisei chutzpah is chayim all the time you'll go with Chilis. And that's not either good enough. Now, what would happen if you would take just the last two, which is Avodah Zarah and Chutzpah, so you would say, bury him in Mitzrayim, and then, so we have Avodah Zarah and Chutzpah. So what would happen if you bury him in Mitzrayim, for now, temporarily, at least for the time being, and later take him out,
you still have the Avodah Zarah problem, if he's going to be the same.
Which is the Shnayim of, the ones besides Kina. Now I'll be the Zora. I can't tell you what his voice is. Because his understanding is that the alternative is I'll be the Zora only because they would see that his body doesn't disintegrate. So he says, put him into an iron. Nobody sees his body. Once he's in an iron, his body is not visible, no reason to turn into Avodah Zarah, right? Elamai, he doesn't want to be a Chutzpah, so we'll take him out. When we leave, we'll take him along. But in an Aron, we'll take him along. So he says, therefore, certainly it's a Farakina. And therefore, he says, all of this, all three of them, he says, are in the Pasuk. Alma Sikmereini Mimitzrayim. Don't bury Mimitzrayim, that's because of Kina. Unisostari Mimitzrayim. And carry me out of Mitzrayim immediately. Why? I don't want to be in Avodah Zarah. Because I can't be Kurosom in Dafkan Eretz Yisrael, that's because he may see Chutzpah Yitzchayim. So I mean, all three of them are in the three Tzivuyim that he says here. Al Nosimere Mitzrayim, 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 Kvartani B'Kurosom. Which one of them tells you another part of what we're talking about here in the Rashi.
How come Rashi doesn't
say it? All of this, all on this?
Yeah.
Hold on, Richard.
I mean, it would have been maybe one more line. I mean,
probably been a lot of lines, and the Rav is about 15 lines.
Because the Rav gives if you start with the answer, like Rashi sometimes does, we just say, because it says three things, these are the three reasons.
You're saying, you're saying, why Rashi bring those three things in his...
Right, why didn't he say?
Almost in Vereni, we were trying, yeah. And many would be Madaik, exactly like Joban Madaik. Now, I'm sure we're learning actually that way to say, where's the Madaik Amas? Why is Rav in the Dibur on us? What's Rav was a Rishon, so I guess he had a chutz to do that.
The chutz of Lamed is out of place anyway. Shechati Mavosa becomes his four. Bonus is Tani.
Now, Shechati Mavosa means I will die. Doesn't mean where to be buried.
Tani Mavosa. The story that it's already asked, no, it's a terrain. It's already asked for that.
In other words, you're saying, Kishashkav Mavosa, Almos a great Mitzrayim, so Tani Mavosa. I kind of think that the Chayim Kodesh is probably asked. Anyway. Because if you don't, if you don't learn it, but it's me. Kind of thing that usually gets into the order of the process. Okay, let's look at a Rashi here. And you get into it. It's a famous Rashi, but there's so much taken in this Rashi that we take out of it. This is the famous shtickel. It's a Perek Mem Ches Posuk Zayin. This is on the famous Posuk. Rahim Avoyim Itadol Meisel Ayrochel. Children for hundreds of years have been singing their little piece with a special Megan. I don't know if they've been over here. And they show it. But this goes way back. My brother, when he arrives in Ukraine, this goes back 30 years ago, almost 30 years ago, and he met a Hebrew who brought up a cheder over 100 years ago, and they had those shtiklach with the same tune with the Yiddish that they had in Birchus Yaakov. It looks like not everyone's familiar with that over here, but it was the tune, how it said with the words in Yiddish, Birchus Yaakov and Vani, this pasuk. And he said, this guy repeated it in the same way that's being taught, a very old traditional thing. What is said there is whatever said in Rashi was put into Yiddish into the Pasuk. So let's see the Pasuk in the Rashi. V'ani b'voyim mipadon meso l'ayrochel. When I came from Padon Aron, Rochel died on me in Eretz Canaan. Baberech, on the way. V'oid kibra saras lo le'efros, just a little bit. To come into Ephros, which is in a city in Eretz Yisrael, bought she by before then. What career? Some the derech Ephros, on the way to Ephros, he beisach. Let's see what Rashi says about that. The Ramaschul by Bereho Shom. Let's see Rashi. By Bereho Shom, lo yehoi lachtiyo afilu lebeis lechem, lachmiso lo'aretz. I didn't even take her to beis lechem, to the city. To bring you into Eretz Yisrael, to a city in Eretz Yisrael. V'yodati, and I know, sheyesh b'lib cholai, that you have something against me because of it. Avodalucha, but I want you to know. Yaakov explains to them now. Shalpi ha-dibur k'varati Hashem. I buried her there because the Rebbe Hashem told me to. Shetehei le'ezru le'boneho, that she should be a help to her children, k'sheyagle o'yisom le'buzradon. When a buzradon will send them out of the ghost. So you oivrim derech shom. They were passing through that place. Yosef Rochel al kivra. Rochel came out on her grave, over her grave. Boicho, and she cries. Vakeshas alein rachman, begs for mercy for them. Shenema koil b'romo nishma. A voice is heard in Roma. And she cries for her children. Vakodesh boicho meshivo. And the Rebbe Yisrael answers her. Yesh socher l'pulos echnum Hashem. You have schar for your actions. So says Hashem. The shofabon was vulam, and the children will come back to their boundary. Now I want to study this Rashi a little bit. Because there's a number of kashas that I think need to be asked on this Rashi in order to understand what he wants and why he wants it. The first question is, the fact that Yaakov never explained himself or excused himself up until this point, would suggest that the complaints of Yosef that he's referring to would have been awakened right here. In other words, I asked you to marry me, it's Canaan, now you're upset at me. That's what you think. You think I'm going to do this for you? What did you do for my mother? But if you think about this a little bit over here, and you start thinking about who the people are that we're discussing, and this starts to sound like some sort of vengeance, are we thinking here, that Yaakov suspects Yosef of wanting to take revenge against him, and therefore now he wakes up and says, listen, please don't. I'll explain myself. Right? But that paints Yosef in a terrible light. Which doesn't make enough sense, based on who we know Yosef is especially. Again, we can make that assumption, knowing that any of Shagitim of Tanakh we would make such an assumption about. But Yosef HaTzadik, of all people, who was wronged 1,000 times worse, and he looks past everything, and now we're afraid, Yaakov is afraid, Yosef is going to take revenge against your own poor father? So what's the shot on that? How do we understand what actually came up on there? Question number one. Another question, I think, is an important question. In context, let's use over here the contrast of other Yishayim. A lot of times it's fun to use the contrast of other Yishayim, because Rashi keeps on repeating constantly, I came here to tell the truth to Shomeka. So he came here to tell the truth to Shomeka. Let's see what the other Pashtonim say, and let's see what's wrong with that pshat. So the Ramban has a pshat here when he says, Yaakov excuses himself to you. He agrees with that. But what's the excuse? The excuse, he says, is, he says, what should I have done? He says, I can't. I couldn't leave over the family in order to go and bury your mother. What can I do? Dr. Ramban, I have property, I have a family. How much can I do? And therefore, if we're going to have a very long call, we'll shoot in some mikro l'chayra. You read the passage, that's something that fits right in, simply and easily. She died outside the city. I couldn't stop going into the city. I had the whole family just left along. How much got from that? So he sues himself. And he says, I wasn't doing chas v'sholem out of any malice, but out of stuff. Or, look at the Sephorno. He also has a pshat here. Sephorno's pshat, different. He says, Govro lai tirdosi v'ave lusi. In other words, he says, I was overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed. I couldn't stop now making a trip. Rashi brings a medrash agadah, which has l'chayra no roots or hint anywhere in this pasuk. Right? A whole story that's not hinted at anywhere in the pasuk. What's the necessity to go do that? What's the need to take a medrash that doesn't l'chayra have any roots in the pasuk and put that in a pshat to easily follow what he's doing, what he's pashtonim says? How is this pshat better than what they're saying?
Well, there is a elsewhere in this parsha where you have with Shimon and Levi and how Yaakov criticizes their double standard, that what they did for their sister, but what they didn't do for their brother. So he's complaining about a double standard the sons had. So here he's saying, this is not a double standard, what I did for your mother and what I'm asking you to do for me. There's no relation between there's no comparison between the two.
You're making a strong point, but when you look back at the Ramban and the Sephorno, their peers would also respond to your point. Which is, he's saying, look, I was in a position that you're not in. I was traveling on the road with dozens of people, a family, children, couldn't do it. You're not in that position. You're a king. You're not schlepping a family on the road somewhere. Do this for me. Or, I was completely overwhelmed. I'm alone. I lost my wife. Meisa olai, right? Meisa olai, which is, like the Gemara says, Isha Meisa elu labala. In other words, he's overwhelmed with grief, he just lost his partner in life. But yeah, that's not what happened over there. So he tells you, either way, he's responding to that same point that you're making, which is, not a double standard, I'm excusing myself either way. But what's the need to go into future nevuas, which is what the Medrash
says? He said it on the Chashim, it's very unfair that he's wrong. Not to take any excuses. Those are excuses.
There you go. So I want to explain a little further what the good doctor is saying. I want to get a little further into that nekuda over there. Well, first I want to ask one more question. Which is, Rashi, when he quotes the pasuk about Rochel Imeno and her schus, so he says, Yesh socher lepu'ulosech. Tischar to your deeds, your actions. No deeds or actions were discussed up until this point. Right? We're discussing her tefillos. in that same pasuk, in the part that Rashi alludes to in Vegoimer, and doesn't give us those words, it says, Yesh tikva l'achrisa, there's a hope at the end, because of you. That l'chayr would be the words that would be more fitting for discussing tefillos. That roughly then it was as follows. But to say yourself l'pulo feich doesn't seem to be l'chayr in the story that's being used there. So why is it that Rashi picks those words of the pasuk rather than other words that l'chayr would be more fitting? Therefore, I think, and along the lines of what to say, I want to pay attention to one expression here in Rashi, which I think is sending such a resounding message, and I think that it's an emotional Rashi, a very sensitive Rashi, and it's even a psychological Rashi. Rashi says, not Yesh bedat cholai, you have something in your mind against me. Rashi doesn't say Yesh hotaroimus olai, there's times against me. Rashi says Yesh belib cholai, you have in your heart. What's the heart thing here that he's talking about? Rashi is not suggesting, like many would think, that Jason has kindness on Yaakov Avinu. He doesn't understand him. You have to explain yourself to me. Why did you do this? You did the wrong thing, Father. Now what's going on? He understands it. That's not the problem. And he accepts the excuse. Not even the problem. Intellectually, Jason understands completely what went on there. Half this sometimes. That's not the issue. The issue here is that even whatever, no matter how much he understands logically and intellectually, his mother is missing something that's on foot. And that bothers him. It hurts him. He's hurting. This is not about the actor here coming and giving excuses. Right? And therefore, yesh belibcha, it's hurting. Right? This is the problem that the actor of Avinu is realizing. And what he's also realizing, which is what you said, what you just said, which is, this pain is misoyer when Yaakov Avinu starts to discuss the chshuvos of getting buried. Not only in Esau, but most of them. So this is where this comes off. Not kindness. It's not a business. Yep, Gevaldik. I understand you completely. I understand what you did with my mother, and I understand what you want. And my mother didn't have that. And she's laying out there in a field alone, outside of the city, instead of being buried. Most of my yes, it's all yours. I'm a vassal with the most of my failures. Not kindness. There's pain going on. It hurts him.
What pain is it kind of?
The pain is not from an intellectual kind of though. And this is what I say is a psychological aspect. But a lot of times we confuse those two things. It can't be pain because it makes sense. But it has nothing to do with it. Emotions and intellect don't necessarily follow. I can understand things terribly, don't mean they don't hurt. Right? If I get a shock from somebody, even if I understand that it was a great thing, don't let me know it doesn't hurt. Right? Feelings come off automatically when it makes sense or not. Feelings don't have to make sense. Feelings don't follow logic. I always say, oh, Abraham J. Twersky, well, you know, everyone heard of him, he has about 70 books. And so he tells a story in one of his books about how he's a psychiatrist. So he had to do residency in one of the hospitals. And while he's doing that residency, he says there was a patient in the hospital who had some kind of neurological condition. That was funny. Some kind of neurological condition where he would occasionally, without warning to himself or anyone else, he would lose his control over what was going on with his arms and legs. And he would suddenly flail out at and anything that was in his path. Anyway, Dr. Tversky is walking by, and as he walks by one time, the guy gives him a whack across the face. Now he says, I was familiar with him and his story and his file and everything. That wasn't the issue. But he says, the second he hit me, I was going to throttle him. Because when I figure out, it doesn't matter what you understand. If somebody just whacks you, you're angry. Yeah? How often does it happen? Unless I'm the only idiot in the room. How often does it happen when you're tired and awful in the right mood? You can get upset at an inanimate object sometimes, right? You bump into the closet, and like, you know, you're about to take it out of the closet, and the people around you have to resist, reminding you who made the first move there, you know? That this is an inanimate object here. It didn't go at you first, you know? In other words, feelings don't follow logic. So anyway, Yosef Ashtetel, he is the Meister. He is the Meister. He is the Meister. But it hurts him. Now, what can you answer to that? And here there needs to be the Pratana Master. So Rashi has to bring the Divrei Agoda. Why? So here one of the fathers, what's the chat when we ask, there's Chodesh and all kinds of times, we're asking for Nahama. What's the definition of Nahama? My humble opinion, and I think, I'm sure it says in different places, but what is a Nahama? You know Nahama is?
Yeah,
well, you know what that is? You know where it comes from, Nahama? Nahama comes when you understand that whatever happened was important and necessary. When you get that understanding, the explanation, not as to why somebody's not guilty or somebody's not at fault, why nobody meant to hurt you and this and that, but why the Zachet of himself. He was a good place for that. Right? Now you feel good about it. Now you don't only feel, I will blame you or this and that. You feel like, you know what? That was a Nahama. Nahama is when it's revealed to us why this was good, why this was the greatest thing that could have happened, why it was so important and so special. That's that was a Nahama. So Leila, what does Rashi come and say? Rashi comes and says, it's not just I dumped her and you can't blame me for it. It's a Tehela Ezra Levanel. She's there for a reason. There's going to be a Tehela from this. There's a purpose here. Something's being fulfilled. Right? And therefore, according to the other Pirushim, like you just suggested before, it's an excuse. I'm not guilty, okay? I'm not at fault, okay? But that doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. That's not a Vakal Masha Believer. That doesn't take away the pain in the heart. But when you bring these Divrei Agoda, it's a Nahama. It's a reason why she needed to be buried. And so Lameila, that can help Taka remove the pain of Yosef as to what's going on with his mother. Now, let's just take this a step further. So come to Chai is that the fact that Rochel Imenu is buried far from the home, out of this road, is a tweezer for her children. So let's follow now the heart of a mother, especially a mother like Rochel Imenu, where Taka comes out and doubts everybody's children, by the way. As I mentioned in the shul a number of weeks ago, she's doubting everybody's children. Her children only are Yosef and Yom, but she comes out there and doubts everybody. And everybody calls her the Mama Rochel, even though the majority of us are not her grandchildren. But she's everybody's mother. Right? So Rochel Imenu, this is a tale of her children. It's clear in that case. She would have demanded this herself. I want to be there. I want to be there. I want to be there for them. I want to be there for them. This is not her being thrown out there against her will. She says, the Rachel told me to do it. Rachel told me to do it because she wants to do that. Yeah? She's a mother. She wants to be out there. She wants to be there for her children. She's going to be a tale. She's going to be a help for her children. So Mela, that shot, yeesh, socha, lupulmothe. The pa'ula we're talking about over here is not the pa'ula, that's not called the pa'ula. The pa'ula is her choice, the koyach or the pa'ula, to be buried far out just in order to be mitzvah and nefesh, to be there for her children. That is the schus. They saw her, the tzchar, for what? For your choice to give up on what would have been important to yourself in order to be there for your children and stuff. So the pa'ula vitor of giving up on her own interest in order to save her children and help her children, that is Hakura brings the Avtocha to Shavu'bon and Lekhul. That's her source.
I mean, Rochel Imenu, the Esam Hermida, the Chua was layer two, right? So maybe it's a gate of...
Exactly. She's looking for all the Avtocha. She's the most selfless, devoted person there is. But when we see this now in the context of Nahama, now listen to the Nahama. The Nahama is not only your mother is buried in that place for a reason that she's going to be a Tehelis, which is a Gevalda Nechomah. But he's not a Nechomah. Because within this whole story is the most beautiful Hesped on the Milos of his mother. Look who your mother is. Look at the Milos of your mother. Who's willing, who knows what the Milos of Achpel is, but is willing to give up on that in order to give herself up to our children. So these two Nechomahs going on. There's two forms of Nechomah. One Nechomah is she's there and it's going to be gewaldige Tehelis and it's not just some mistake of her being left out. But the second Nechomah is look at your mother. Look who she is. The gewaldige gavlus that itself. And here I just want to add one last point. Now first we have Akasha. Why is it, even according to everything we've said, why isn't the Yaakov, why did the Yaakov didn't excuse himself or explain all this to Yosef right at the beginning? Right? Look at the context. This is Pasuk Zion in Parak Mamchet. But when he said almost like brain with time, Shahafi and Avoy, that's a bunch of sukkum as well. Why don't we say it there? That's a bomba casa. That's not a bomba casa. Where was all this explanation over there? Instead we wait 7 psukim. It's a different encounter, by the way. He achrei has more mailer. And here they see their basic choil and he takes his 2 kids with him. Yeah? And finally, after Shnei Bonecha, the Lord Muchalef Mitzayim, Ephraim and Ashim, and Shum Yiyu Li, Tani Bavari Min Pavel, and there's a weird voice, this is the place for that. How's the Kasa of Osir? Bamba Kasa, no? Oh, so now let's understand the Vedic. Pshat is, and it all fits together. Because, why is it that Menashe and Ephraim are being B'chezmen Sh'ol Boda? What's that source coming from? That source is also coming from this story with Rachel Emanu. In other words, the Hemshech here is, I am giving Menashe and Ephraim rights, equal rights to the rest of the Shvatim because of your mother Rachel. Why is that? Because Pshat is like this. What was her source? Her source was, she was willing to be apart from Yaakov Avinu. They said, Hail Ezra Labana. That itself gives her the source that those who are Be'eretz Mitzrayim Ad Voyei Lecha Mitzrayim, those who also grew up in the distance, those of her descendants, who just like her, were not close to Yaakov Avinu, and still grew up as they did, we have. In other words, those who were in Mitzrayim, far away from me, that's Mitzrayim, Adboy Elecha Mitzrayim, Lihem. Why is that? I think it was Tata Mesa Lai Rochel Beskenat, who chose to also be okay with being distant from me in order to do what the Rebbe Yisrael wants. And they were, the two things are connected to each other. Hidavka tells her about, Hidavka tells Joseph about Mama Rochel, together with saying that as a result of that, I'm going to give you Menashe and Ephraim, who are going to be people from the Shul. Shul was born at the end of the Tarak. Because the fact that Yisrael, the full author, which means, because you get a full of Mabata on the place in the Mabata Machpelah, before the Shul was born in the Shul. That's the source that you feel should be like that. And the Shul was born was the result. Okay, we want to take a statistical like half a close on the line with that, let's go south. Have a Chaim HaKadosh, probably up here, a whole bunch, if anyone can have a Chaim HaKadosh. I want to give one to Oslo, I'll leave your time. We can copy the question. Wait, I think some photos. Okay, so we're going to look at Pasuk Yud Ches, Perek Mem Ches, Pasuk Yud Ches. This is the story that Ephraim and Menashe are brought for a bracha to Yaakov Avinu, and famously he switches his hands and he puts his hand on the head of Ephraim instead of the hand of Menashe's right hand. Here may Yosef loichei off. Perek Memches, Pasuk Yudches, and this in these copies here, it's the bottom on the right side. Bottom on the right side. Anyway, Yosef loichei off. Tam sheherik kol eila advarim. What do we have to say to this? Loichei off. Zeh bachare. Yeah? Which the Chayyur should have been enough. Not so. This is the Bukhari. Okay. Now we have to say, Sim Yimilcha al Rishon. We got that part of it. Now it is tough to say, no. This is not. This is the Bukhari. And what you're doing is a strange thing. That's all. What do you have to say? Give him a command now. Sim Yimilcha al Rishon. So he says, there's a double thing going on, and that's why there's a double statement there. He didn't stop the case of Echon Beit Rochel. Yosef wasn't sure what actually was going on. He had a suffix, one of two ways of figuring out what's going on. Ha'alafu, shechosh av Yaakov, ki abonim ayu lukuchim biyad Yosef v'sham bracha. That The first way he was figuring out this out is, Yaakov thinks that since Yosef is taking the two thumbs here, Yadua Hadavar, Ki Yikar Biminoi, he would take on his right side, meaning in Yosef's right hand, Habachoy, Bismoiloi Hatsoy. Right? He figured, look, he's coming towards him. Whatever's Yaakov Avinu's right hand is Yosef's left hand. Right? So what's Yosef doing? He has the Bechor in his right hand. So since he doesn't see well, he puts his hand right hand on the left side. Because that's Yosef's right side. That's where Manasseh must be. Because he's there, he will have made Yaakov a Bechor in his right hand. Asher, okay. Therefore, since he thinks that, Sikel Yodov, Ki Manasseh a Bechor. Switches it there. Because Manasseh is the Bechor. And Oy Toi, Yosef Ovid V'yad Yemina. And therefore, his father wants to have Menashe on his right side, not on Yosef's right side. So that's one way to understand what's going on there, that Yosef thinks. The Derech Beis, second way is, Shebechavona Tamachavim, meaning, he's doing this intentionally, he knows the truth, but he's doing this intentionally, Sikel Yodov, lost him in meaning, no, he decided. He knows exactly who is where, but he wants his right hand, for some reason, to be on the younger Kisset. Was there Omer Levitchilo, so he has to respond, he has to address both things. Omer Levitchilo, in Kabbalah, he, L'choy Shvoy. If his intention is because he thinks, Ki L'kochem Aviyem B'yodoy, HaBachorilim, Minoy Shol Yosef. Yeah? In other words, he thinks that their father, meaning Yosef, takes the Bachor on the right side of Yosef, so L'loichein Obikwe Sha'atach Yosef. Not so like you think. No, this here, on my left side and on your right side, is the Bechor. So that addresses number one. If you know the fact, then you know that the Bechor is to your right side. But you made a decision here, a conscious decision, to ignore that. You are holding, withholding your right hand from the firstborn. But tell my no. Put your right hand on his head, Pierce. Why are you withholding the rightful good from the one who belongs to? And he ends up ominously. You father knows. What is caused by these types of situations? Because you did the same thing. Right? You gave me preferential treatment to my older brother. Don't start that again on my kids. Right? So now let's see, the next piece is the hemshech of what Yaakov is responsible. Ayimoyinot. Now his father refused. Ayimoyinot. I know all about it. So first of all, Omer Ayimoyinot. Why did he add the word Ayimoyinot? We see, he said no, because he said, Yadati, but I know all about it, but. So why does he have to preface it by saying, and he refused? So he said, he was trying actively pick up his father's hand and put it onto the other head. So the first Ayimoyin is, he resisted. You know why I want to do it. So first of all, in action, Ayimoyin refuses. And now he begins to speak as well in addition to that. Kofalema, Yodati b'ni, Yodati. I know, my son, I know. What's the double awesome? Oh, so we know he's about to say a double response to the double question. Neskavim l'hoshit l'ashivim l'beiz d'volim sh'om. I'm not going to be asking. He wants to answer the two things that Yosef said, as we explained. So therefore, the following, Kineged Masha Omarta, Lo Yichen, Ki Zeh HaBachor, against what you said, Lo Yichen, Ki Zeh HaBachor, V'lo Yikamo Yishani Choyshe, not as I think, Shasadudim Behefa, that they're backwards, which means that they're B'chor is on your right hand, Yodat Yibani. I know that. I know that they're in the right order. When he says Yadati Bini, why does he say Yadati Bini? In other words, he's being Meramed, how am I so sure that they're in the right order? Pish, since you're my son, Minastam Loi Tachshiri Minchol of Mei Yemini. Since you're my son, and I know that you are Machnia yourself to me, I figure you probably aren't thinking of your right hand, probably thinking of your father's right hand. But I already understood that. He says, I figured that out. I'm sure you have the Bechor at my right hand and not at your right hand. But that's all figured out. That's fine. So if you're worried that I might not get the Messias right, I got the Messias. Now, the second Yodati, what's that? Today, I'm not sure how you're standing last week, but I'm not sure. You're telling me one second. Deal with this properly. Put your right hand on the head of the Bechayr. I said, Sinni, you've been called a Rishon. Yodati gam zeh. I know that too. I know that the Bechayr belongs first, normally. Ubechlau yidiyozu, nichnes ogam yidiyas amitsuvav midover zeh, vaseh ken liyosu. When I know about it, he says, I also know what it came out of this when I did it here. So I know the whole story. I know that the Bechayr belongs first, and I know that there was trouble when I didn't put the Bechayr first. I know all that. Don't worry about it so much, and don't worry that your child, your Menashe, is a bad kid, and that therefore I'm ignoring. That's the song. He's loy tashin shul madrega shkreilo. Gam hu yigdo. Don't worry. He's not a lo madrega. Gam hu yilo om. Gam hu yigdo. Not only will he be om, he'll be great. He is great and he'll be great. And we're not chas v'shol and not chas. Yigdal v'yilo om. V'ulom. What Yerus is tiny was. How could you make the younger one greater than the b'chay? V'ulom. Oh, hey, v'akot and yigdal mimeno. What do you mean? Leile tzad b'rchosi. I'm not making the younger brother bigger. It's not my brother that's going to do it. This is a fact. The younger brother, with or without my brother, is going to be greater. Not because of my brother. So don't think that if we turn it this way or turn it that way, it's not going to change. It's not going to change the fact. Ella, why is it? Not because of my brother. The Zara Yimel Egrem is going to be greater because of who is going to come out of him. The Zara Yimel Egrem, which is going to be sure of it. Although at this time right now, even though, as you said, and at this moment, that's an accurate statement, and it makes sense. Also, though, we have to see the future. Which means he's going to be greater. That means right now, Menashe is greater. But also, the time is going to be greater. This is an interesting situation. The younger brother can have older than the older brother. Remember, I never forget when I was born. What's that, 7 or 8 years old? And my older brother, when he was on the start, he just married up his daughter and I went to the hospital, I think. He must have been teaching me badly. I don't know. I remember what that part was saying. I don't remember. All I remember is that the next door neighbor that thing. He's getting me really angry, huh? I know what you're thinking now, he said. If you get older than him, you're going to get him. You know what I said? You never get older. Well, here's an interesting situation. Awesome, yeah, call the years ago. He's going to be older. He's going to be bigger. Chaim Ramzal said, "Zeh Yosemeno Gidoyim, big man." So Zeh Yosemeno Yeshiva. Uminastam shal shela zu hoyse b'shoyres nishma pasevet mi believe birchas yachim. This is the part that is interesting. He says, the fact that Yeshua is going to come out of Ephraim didn't come from this brother here. It was in the Shoyrish Neshama of Ephraim to be able to have this descent. Which reminds me of Meir the Kizach. You do it at the altar of Slobodka, the Master Mechach. Mechach is by excellence. They say that the altar of Slobodka, the way the yeshiva in Slobodka was built, was that there was a downstairs floor, and then upstairs, there was, like we sometimes have today in some of the Bible schools, on the top floor, and there's one-way glass, right? So they can see out, and nobody can see out. And the ultimate Lombotsky is to stand there, some of every day, and study the Talmidim below. Now think about them. Who are they? What are their creatures? What are their minds? What can he bring out of them? What can he polish? So anyway, that's the big thing to say about Lombotsky, is that it wasn't a factory. Different people came out completely different from each other, based on what their creatures were. Because their job was, the way the Alter was almost looked at it, he was the chanuch of the place, and he brought out what this person had. That's how you have such disparate individuals coming out of Slobodka. It's amazing how you have a Rav Hutner coming out of Slobodka. Anyone knows anything about Rav Hutner? He was this Rebbesha figure who had Mamorim Lo'imek, and had a whole Rebbesha and Hoga, completely different style to anyone else. And from the same place that the Yankees come out, anyone who knew him, he was a cold, calculated, the practical man. Completely different. Then you have Rabbi Victor Miller coming out of there. A whole different style than any of these other two. His own way completely. got the Purushim that came out of there. Somebody, everybody was somebody different. It's not like there's no stance there, there's no schnick. Right? Everybody comes out different. But the interesting thing that I wanted to tell you to hear is that ultimately on both guys, he used to study his Talmidim. I'm told that he went, he was at the head of the yeshiva for 40 years. So he had Talmidim and he had their children there too in the same yeshiva. And he would sometimes observe and remark when he saw a Talmud son, he said, that Mila is shining in the kid there. I noticed that Mila in the father already. But it was more potential, and here it came out in all its glory in the kid. In other words, it's here, it's hereditary to a degree, it's in the genes somehow, but the father didn't bring the whole thing out yet. But he did so much a job, and here it is in all its glory in the kid. Right? In other words, what the Chankar is saying over here is a bit reminiscent of the same idea. He says, it was B'shoyah Shlishmas HaShevet Uliberk HaShevet. It was in there. It was in the father already. Now here already, here at this point, he still says, Menashe is greater than Ephraim right now. But Ephraim has an potential that is going to ripen in one of his descendants in this way. And he's going to bring out a Yeshua from inside himself. It's not some coincidental thing that Ephraim happens to come out from him. In that case, maybe we could say, Ephraim in that case doesn't deserve right now to be put ahead because of what's going to happen. Elonai, what comes out of Yeshua is a manifestation of what is already in Ephraim. So the male is up there, Chaimah Kodesh, that's the pshat of what Yaakov Avinu is saying. He says, I know all about it. But there's a future. The future is in the present also. And the male says, there is. I said, how can I name a demon of Bechor? Therefore, I'm being maximum to Bechor, not because Chas V'Sholem. He's not great. Not even because Chas V'Sholem, he's not going to be great. Not even because Chas V'Sholem, he's not going to have descendants who are great. But Ephraim has descendants who are going to be greater. Therefore, they don't know that.
Yeah.